Andrew Hanauer had no way of knowing back when the One America movement was founded just how essential the already important work would quickly become. After all, we are now seeing the horrifying effects of relentless polarizing, othering, and dividing our nation for politics and profit everywhere. The situation has caused many to throw up their hands in frustration and despair. But in keeping with a core foundational principle of bringing small groups of people and local communities together, and then scaling those encounters in remarkable ways, the One America movement is relentlessly focused on its mission and raising up the potential of re-engagement and connection in both sacred and secular settings. Now, with all of that in mind, I am delighted to have Andrew Hanauer, president and CEO of the One America movement, back with us again. Andy, thanks so much for being with us on State of Belief Radio again.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be with you again.
I am excited to hear more about the work that you're doing with faith communities all across this country.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. I mean, you know, obviously it's been a hard year when we and really in addition to the pandemic, right? I mean, when we talked about polarization being toxic, we used to have to explain what that meant, and now we don't. Now I think people get it.
Yeah.
So you know, we really excited about the work that we're doing in a couple ways. One is bringing faith communities together across divides, political, religious, racial divides, not to sit and talk and debate, you know, politics, but to roll up our sleeves and work, get to work, do things together, do things that matter together,
mm-hmm.
Work in our communities, fight the opioid crisis, rebuild, you know, after the impact of the pandemic. And that's a huge part of what we're going to be doing over the next year as we begin to be able to do things in person again. But the other thing that we're doing that I'm really excited about is we know that these divisions are also, you know, toxic inside congregations, right? And so pastors and rabbis are dealing with how that toxicity comes down from our political system and our media and social media and impacts the people inside their congregations. And so we're really doing a lot to help religious leaders navigate those dynamics. How do you have hard conversations inside your church or your mosque? How do you confront toxic forms of behavior that stem from that inside your congregation?
Yeah. So in what settings do you see this as needing to be addressed most urgently right now?
That's a great question. I think this may be an easy way out in some sense, but I think it's actually all of us, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the reality is that toxic polarization, polarized sort of psychology, brings out things in us that were already there and makes them a lot worse. And in some cases that can lead people to horrifying acts of violence. In other cases, it just makes us a little snarkier, a little more smug in our belief system. It leads to bad decisions. It makes us less likely to have conversations with our neighbors. So the impact is not always symmetrical, but it feeds itself. And so, you know, no matter how big or small, when we allow ourselves to be part of that sort of toxic system, we're really enabling it in all other formats around the country. So what I say a lot is that the most urgent thing that any of us can do is refuse to be part of that system ourselves. Don't allow cable news or social media to reduce complex issues down to neat little packages that make us feel better about ourselves. Don't you know, abandon your neighbors or family or friends because of a litmus test that you've sort of created in your head about what their behavior says about them or what have you, or who they voted for. These are simple things that are difficult, but really, if we start internally, I think we can really start to actually address the problem.
Yeah. I've seen heartbreaking stories of longtime pastors leaving the ministry because they can no longer bridge the political rifts that have emerged in their congregations. That's why your focus on working with houses of worship is so encouraging to me and so necessary.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think to your last question, too, if there is one place where we see the most urgent need, it is with these pastors. So we work a lot with pastors from sort of traditionally evangelical backgrounds and denominations or traditions. And, you know, look, they went to seminary. They learned all sorts of things at seminary. But a lot of what they're seeing right now are things that they really weren't, that they really haven't been prepared for. They don't have training on. And as you've said, very tragically, a lot of them are leaving because it's so toxic and it's so stressful and difficult. And so part of what we're trying to do is just support those who are in the midst of this, support them with resources and trainings on how do you navigate these difficult conversations? How do you navigate misinformation or disinformation? How do you deal with a situation in which your congregants seem to be placing their political worldview ahead of their faith? Mm-hmm. And so we want to support those pastors with those kinds of resources and trainings, but also with peer support, with friendship, with fellowship. Yeah. Bring them together, give them people they can talk to who they can say, hey, this is what I saw on Facebook. What did you see? How did you handle that? Yeah. Share best practices. Yeah. That's urgent. We need to support these religious leaders in the midst of what we're seeing as a country.
Listen, I have to ask you, the organization's mandate lists engagement with groups as diverse, and many would say irreconcilable, as the Southern Baptist Convention and Black Lives Matter. How on earth do you do that?
You know, I think, first of all, we get caricatures a lot in our media, right? I mean, a very typical media story is to take the most extreme person in a group, put their most extreme view on display, and then say, gosh, how bad is that, huh? Mm-hmm. And I think the reality is that most Americans are not there. Most Americans are frustrated. They're exhausted. They're tired of the circus. They have strong political views for sure, but they want to see society function. They want to see their local government function. They want to have good relationships with their neighbors. They want to help people in their community. Mm-hmm. I think that's true of most people who are activists in Black Lives Matter. I think it's true of most Southern Baptists. I think it's just mostly true. The first answer to your question is I don't think it's actually as hard as it seems. I think our model is also not built on bringing together the most extreme people in a room at the same time as a starting place, right? We bring communities together, and over time, those communities will have engagement from people who are farther and farther, you know, away from feeling comfortable about engaging across divides. Mm-hmm. That takes time. It takes relational trust. It takes thoughtfulness. It's not something you just stick people in a room and just hope it goes well, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it really is long-term work.
Yeah. Andy, would you talk about ways One America Movement is able to convey the threat of toxic polarization and work towards solutions without pointing fingers of blame, which would be a sure way to end any conversation across lines of division?
Yeah, that's a great question. I wrote about this recently. Early on, you can always organize unlikely coalitions around shared enemies, right? I mean, after 9/11, Americans were exceptionally united because we had a shared enemy, this terrorist threat. But we also know that that's really dangerous, that if you make other human beings the enemy, that can lead really uncomfortable places. I think social media companies are immensely responsible for some of the things we're seeing right now. I don't believe that the human beings who work at those tech companies should be our enemies or the people that we target with our rhetoric. We have to be better than that. So we're trying to help people see that there's both a system at play here that, as you said, divides us for politics and profit. That's 100% true. Mm-hmm. And we're also challenging people. It'd be easy to say, you know, we're all the victims of this system, but we're also the perpetrators, right? We're also responsible. We also contribute to it. What articles do we click on because of the headline? What books do we buy because we're going to like what it says, you know, about those other people? What people are we not willing to have conversations with who we actually could influence in a way that brings the country together? So we just refuse to take the easy way out and blame certain people without also looking in the mirror.
Mm. It's clear that the silo effect of social media serves to move people further and further away from each other. The physical isolation of the pandemic only made this worse. So what are some ways that you're able to reach people who have self-isolated from the rest of society and are therefore the most impacted by the toxic polarization that you are fighting against?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's a really big problem. I think our model is based on the idea that we work with congregations, right? And so the people who are actively involved in religious communities are often less isolated. They're often more connected. But they also have relatives who are more isolated, right? The people who you're describing often have a grandmother or a sister or a brother who go to church, even if they don't. And so, you know, our hope is that by working with the millions and millions of Americans who belong to religious communities, we're also going to have the ability to help them best reach those people who are really more isolated. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, we also have to remember that, you know, we aren't necessarily the best messenger to reach those people. Their relatives might be the best messenger. And so it's not about how do we reach 370 million Americans. It's really about how do we do the work we do within the religious community and empower people in those communities to be effective at helping to stitch this country back together after the isolation and division of especially the past year.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the pandemic, I know the various restrictions must have had a significant impact on the in-person engagements the One America movement is so good at. But I see you also have developed some powerful online training programs, and I'd love to have you talk about some of the ones that you've done as well as what's coming up in the next few weeks, if you would.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for noting that. Yeah, we've missed people, and we like people. We like being around people. And so, online events are never for us as good as being out there, but we did. We pivoted during the pandemic to offer some online trainings, and we think they're really interactive and fun. We help people with things like how to talk to your neighbor, how to understand the science behind polarization. We're developing more materials and more things online that people can get involved with on their own time. Doing things on your own, but also having support from our organization as needed. And I think these things are really helpful because they help give people a language for how to understand what they're seeing, right? When you see people acting the way they do on social media, understanding how group norms work, how social pressure works, what the psychology is behind that, it helps you sort of name it and say, oh, okay, I get what's going on here, and not feel so overwhelmed by it. So yes, if people are interested in being on one of those trainings, you can go to our website, oneamericamovement.org, all spelled out, and there'll be a series of opportunities to sign up for free events. If you are in certain geographic areas where we're going to be doing a lot of work, there are going to be a lot of ways to get involved in person. That's true in Pennsylvania, Maryland, Mississippi, Michigan, Ohio, Illinois, Georgia, Utah, Oklahoma, California. So, you know, in a lot of other places as well, there will be opportunities where if you're especially a member of a faith community, we will be doing things in your community, and there'll be events that you can be part of and part of this work. You know, if you are a religious leader who's really looking for support in navigating this really divisive moment, reach out to us through our website, and we will be in touch for sure. And then if you're anybody who just wants to learn more and get a sort of a glimpse for the kind of work that we're doing, you know, there are online events and trainings and conversations that you can be a part of. They're free. And you can just go to our website, oneamericamovement, all spelled out, .org, and sign up.
Andrew Hanauer is the president and CEO of the One America Movement, a growing national initiative to counter and heal the toxic polarization that is plaguing our nation. A gifted public speaker and inspiring writer, Andy has been generous with his time on this show. Thank you for being with us on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you, and I appreciate the questions and everything that you're doing.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Your donations help keep us on the air. Please consider making a tax-deductible gift as we celebrate 15 years of continuous broadcasting. Information on how to donate is available at stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. Stay up to date by subscribing to the free weekly State of Belief podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform. And take a moment to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Be a part of the conversation. Social media helps connect like-minded people in conversation and company. I'd ask you to share State of Belief with just one person this week, one person for whom you think this might be helpful. Our producer is Ray Kirstein. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see, Welton.